Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. Glad to have you on board tonight, wherever you are around this ever more besieged and beleaguered planet. And believe me, it's going to be a very difficult year for a number of reasons on a number of fronts. It's not getting any easier out there. And everywhere you look, more warning signs nonstop. Eric is with us again, as always. Hello, partner. What's up?
Hi there. Well, it's Friday.
We have. And we have almost a double dose of news and information tonight. Very heavy. This is not something that's ever going to diminish. It's only going to get worse and more intense. And that's what's happening with people. They're getting overloaded with information. A lot of it is bogus, unfortunately. A lot of it is professional disinformation. And they get to the point where they do not know what to believe. One of the latest rumors that has taken on a life of its own has to do with eggs and the fires at a number of large chicken agriculture facilities, whether they're egg layers or are just being raised for meat. A lot of chickens supposedly come down with avian flu, and they're culled, and then we have fires on top of that. There's a rumor now that's gathering momentum that egg yolks somehow can take care of spike proteins. In other words, mitigate them. And this is something we need to talk about briefly here because it's just not true. Anyway, go ahead. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, a study was circulated earlier this week regarding the ability to produce antibodies to the S1 portion of the spike protein in the egg yolks of chickens. And I guess naive people seeing the headline jumped to the conclusion that somehow eggs would prevent either COVID or vaccine injury or spike poisoning, all of the above. And therefore, that's the reason why they're destroying all these birds and egg-laying facilities. But if you take the time to read the study, I should just read you the rumor. It started on Twitter. Someone says, "Holy shit, Twitter figured out why they're killing chickens. The eggs kill the vaccine. Eat more eggs." So someone picked this up, and they said, translation, "Eating eggs may stop the spike protein damaging your body. You should eat eggs if you are jabbed or if you have been in regular contact with jabbed people, i.e. shedding." Connecting the dots? So why are egg farms burning down?
Again? Yes.
Again.
Yeah. They're trying to keep those eggs away from us so we won't get better. No, it's not going to happen.
No, the reality is that this was an experiment done. What they do is they inject hens with the antigen, in this case the S1 portion of the spike protein, to cause them to produce antibodies to that antigen. And then those antibodies will end up, hopefully, if they did it right, in the yolks. And then at that point, you can purify those antibodies out and they will be available for therapeutic use. So this has nothing to do with actually eating eggs and having it neutralize spike protein. I mean, even if you were to eat those eggs, those proteins would be destroyed in your digestive juices. But eggs have been used for that purpose before. And there's a product out there known as Hyperimmune Egg, which is purified antibodies to various types of intestinal pathogens that people can take when they're having issues with their gut. So these antibodies will pass through the digestive tract and neutralize many of these pesky pathogens that are causing the problem. Same thing applies with colostrum. Colostrum is a secretion from bovine udders, where it's the first milking of from a mother cow after it gives birth, and it's full of immune globulins. And they are biologically active in humans as well, because they pass through the digestive tract and can render some protection against a variety of pathogens, depending on what that mother cow has been exposed to prior to giving birth.
Summed up very well. So if you hear the egg story, don't buy into it, okay? All right.
Yeah, it's, now, I mean, people are just really speculating wildly without actually reading what's actually being published.
Right. Okay, we had a note from Nurse Anne, just a little quick note, that she was back at work at the hospital, and one of the nurses there is having severe heart pains, chest pains, and is in the ER of where she went to work. So we need to kind of just real quick look over our shoulders and remember that it's been a year now or more since about two-thirds of the healthcare workers in this country decided to take the shot rather than be fired.
Yeah.
And the other one-third quit or were fired. So we lost one-third of the healthcare workers in this country about a year ago. And the two-thirds that are there, if you want to look at it objectively, it sounds morbid, but we have the dying taking care of the dying in many cases. Not going to say all cases, but in many cases. Pretty black irony.
Well, look at all those doctors up in Canada that died
right.
Well, in the last 6 months, just one after the other.
Too many, yeah. It's highly suspicious. All right, we have a special guest tonight, Betty Martini. And Dr. Martini, I think many of you know, she has been beyond courageous in her work for decades now, trying to spread the word about the dangers of aspartame. And no one has done it more devotedly and effectively than Betty Martini. Betty just got out of the hospital after having a heart valve replacement procedure. And we're going to talk about that briefly, but most importantly, she told me and on the phone about what her experiences were in the hospital in terms of the spike injured and the vax dying. It's everywhere now. The hospitals are essentially full, and they're not happy places to be, to put it mildly. What was it, 137 people in the ER waiting to be seen? Where was that?
Oh, I think, didn't Nurse Anne say that?
That's what she said, I think.
It was 111 when we last spoke to her, but then you got a message within the last day
more.
Or two, where it's now up to 137.
Right. Crazy. All right. Let's see if Betty Martini is there. Betty, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jeff.
Hi. Say hello to Erica. She's here.
Hello, Erica. I'm finally
Hi,
glad
Betty.
To meet you. I've
Likewise.
Heard so much about you.
Thank you.
Now,
likewise, though.
Betty has just been out of the hospital for not long, and we very much appreciate her being here. Betty went in, as I said, for a heart operation, which was fortunately successful. She's now recovering, and it's a slow process, but they did apparently fix what needed to be fixed. Now, Betty, when you went in there and you're in the hospital, go ahead and tell our listeners what you told me about what was going on in there. This is pretty grim. Go ahead.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, I spend most of my hours, you know, reading the reports and listening to scientists. And knowing so much about this, that when you go in the hospital and you see it with your own eyes, it's kind of depressing after you've just had, you know, a heart procedure. But the first thing that happened was that I saw everybody scooting down the hall to the right because of a code blue, and I couldn't get any help. I kept buzzing and buzzing, and 3 hours went by, and then this male nurse came. He was very upset. He says, "I'm going to quit medicine." And he was talking that the reason he hadn't come back is he had spent 3 hours trying to start this man's heart. And the next thing I know, they were scooting the other way. They said, it's coded. And when the nurse came back, I said, did the person have a heart attack? And she said, yes, he did. I said, was he vaxxed? And she went on and discussed it. And I said, is it happening constantly like I'm seeing it? And she said, more so on other floors than on this floor. And I had just seen, in the course of a few hours, 2 code blues. And then because I give out aspartame information and also give out information on the vax, I talk to a lot of medical personnel. I talk to all of the doctors. And I'm always trying to see why they're even there if they've been mandated to have it. So I get a great deal of information. Many of them did say they were mandated and they didn't want to lose their job. I said, well, I have a problem with that. I said, if you put before you whether you lose your job or lose your life, I think I'd give up my job. And I happen to have Dr. Michael's book there, Plague of Corruption. I always take that if I'm ever in the hospital, because if you have to convince any of the doctors, that'll do it. And she had the book, and she said, actually, we all are beginning to know what's going on, with just that we can't do anything about it, and we can't warn anybody. So that's just the way that we are. We take care of what we can. But I talked to one nurse for some time, and she said, yeah, on the other floors, she says, they're constantly dying. What are we supposed to do? So that's as grim a situation of staying there. I mean, I was ready to go home because my heart was, I have AFib, and it was going on. And every time I saw them scooting down the hall, I said, oh, no, there's another one dying. But the ones that died when I was there, they were all heart attacks.
Wow.
And they know when they're vaxxed because they've got it on the record.
Uh-huh.
So,
now, you told me about them, go ahead, Betty. Go ahead.
Well, one of the nurses was talking about the vax, and that he didn't understand why
that's
it took so long to try to get a heart going. It just seemed like nothing you could do would help. And I was the one that said, I'm giving up medicine. I've had it. And I apologized for trying to get him to come help me when all this was going on the floor.
But so here's Betty, right after major heart surgery, unable to get anyone to come to her room because people are dying literally on both sides of her, and they're spending 2-3 hours trying to bring these people back to life, which is great, heroic, we appreciate that. But the problem with those who are vaxxed is that the spike protein will eventually, maybe in the beginning, assault the heart, swarm the heart, certainly attach to the heart, and cause a number of issues, not the least of which is the biological signaling for the heart to beat to stop. And the spike protein causes the heart to stop beating. You cannot override the spike and get the heart to come back online. It's just not happening. And that's why the efforts to revive people who are falling over with these heart seizures is so, we'll call it spotty. It just doesn't work a lot. And it was explained by Dr. Daniel Nagase in a video we played. It'll be up in the archives tonight. You can go listen to it again. And he explained how the spike protein will cause the heart muscle, the heart cells, the heart muscle, to stop responding. It'll just sit there and kind of vibrate.
I will tell you also, my husband was in Emory University Hospital, and what a time I had there. And I was actually in many discussions with the doctors because I was giving out information, and I said, you're using the wrong protocol, you know, and the PCR test, And I brought all this information with me, was giving it out. And they came up from risk management and said, please do not discuss or give anything out to physicians. Because after I got through talking to the physicians, they were talking to other physicians. And the first thing that happened, I said, no blood, no vax. And they vaxxed him. They ran in and stuck a needle in his arm, and it was on the bill. So they vaxxed him, and he died. So
your husband.
I was already, my husband, yes. So I was already so upset with what was going on that they'd even killed my husband. And they told me, they said, well, there's people upstairs in ICU that are dying one right after the other. I said, but why are they dying? Why are you using this protocol? And why do you not know that this is a gene therapy? This is not a vaccine. This thing was patented 22 years ago. So they were just discussions day after day after day, and people dying over at Emory University Hospital. But I was in a different one. So I've seen it twice.
Well, in short, what's happening in the hospitals is being pretty well covered up. It's not making the so-called nightly news. And what's happening in the hospitals is an awful lot of coding, people ending up dead. They're just not making it. And it's because of the spike and the injection. And those, we have more to talk about later on tonight about the virus and things, so stay tuned for that. But what was most interesting is this male nurse that told you he has seen so many people, young people, older people, dying of irreversible heart attacks, that he's quitting medicine.
Yes. Yes. That's what he said. So,
yeah.
And I could understand. He was really, in fact, he came back and apologized. He said, I didn't mean to be so rude, but he said, it was pretty hard on me. And
I would say.
So, and I imagine, yeah, it was a very bad night. I asked them, please let me go home. So I wanted to get out of the atmosphere of it. It was that bad.
Well,
were you
home
in a specialty, yeah, like cardiac care or intensive care unit?
You know, I never did ask. I don't think so, because when I talked to the nurse about asking her how many were dying on this floor, and she said more so on other floors. So I assumed I was not on a cardiac floor.
Mm.
And some of the people there were not that. I just had a procedure, so I don't know. It seems to me that the last time I was in a hospital, I was on the same floor. I know that they do put them together, but I don't think I was on the cardiac floor. And I think that's why she said we're seeing more cases on other floors.
That would make sense.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Betty, thank you for being here. Go rest and get better. A lot of work to do here, so we want you. We need you. So you take good care, and thank you for sharing that.
Okay, and thank you too, Jeff and Erica.
Yeah, thank you, Betty. Dear. Rest up. Good job.
All right. Betty Martini, she's one of a kind.
Yeah.
I guess what the lesson here is, stay out of the hospital. If it's at all possible, you're going to be around people who are not well, who are confused, who know pretty much what's going on now. But the general treatment in the hospitals is not what ought to be. Well, I guess I should be more objective about this and say, what the hell can they do? This injection is doing precisely what it was designed to do. It's a killer. It's a bioweapon. It is a killer. So it's not an experimental anything. And anyone calling it a vaccine is doing all of us a disservice. It's a bioweapon. It's owned and operated ultimately by the Pentagon, Department of Defense, okay? So all of you understand that, I'm sure, by now. But if you go into a hospital...
It's a sheddable, spreadable bioweapon.
I was going to mention that, too. You go into a hospital and give us an idea of the shedding and spreading that you run into if you go into the hospital. Because, what, the majority of patients in there are probably in there because of the injection.
Mm-hmm. And the staff, what's left of the staff...
Right.
...is also...
So mix and mingle is not what you want to do in the hospital. And the air circulating, everything touched, you being touched by people who are shedding. We know that shedding now, we have very little doubt, if any, is much worse than we originally even thought. It's not a joke.
No.
So we would encourage all of you to... I'm not saying we're setting an example, but what we do is minimal. Common sense. Wear masks, wear gloves, and I'm close to putting on my half face respirator with two P100 filters. I'm not joking.
There is something that the masks are inadequate at stopping, no question, whether it's the VOCs,
right,
or the particles are that small that at the most the mask is going to diminish. I wouldn't even say minimize, but just diminish what's being aerosolized.
It might be worth 10%, 15%, who knows,
yeah.
20 on a good day.
If you use it properly. I mean, don't be casual. But if you use it properly and the way it's intended to be used in a sanitary manner, then it will offer a little bit of protection.
Right. And the gloves are very simple. Keep them in the car. But adjust your shopping hours. If you go into any kind of a public patronized business, go early or go late. But if you go early, there won't be many people in there, and the air will be still relatively clear. But by the end of the day, the air is loaded with pathogens. Who knows how many? Lots. So there you go. All right. Some time ago, Erica mentioned this, and she was so right, that the injuries caused by the spike mimic the injuries caused by radiation exposure. Now, there's more to that, so go ahead and tell us what the latest is on that. Spike protein and radiation injury similarities. There's a new paper out, and you'll find it under our names in Guess right now. Spike protein and radiation injury similarities. This is very strange and interesting, too.
Well, it's not the first time that this has been discussed. I mentioned early on in the pandemic when Italy was still doing autopsies on the deceased, those who had contracted the virus and supposedly died of the virus or with the virus, their bodies looked like they had been irradiated. The type of damage that they were seeing in the organs and tissues was on a par with something that you'd see with people with radiation poisoning. And we now know the reason why. It's because the oxidative stress that this virus induces in a person, maybe it mostly antagonizes the immune system to a point where the inflammation and oxidative stress is just out of control. And it's unstoppable. I mean, the body becomes depleted in its ability to deal with the oxidative stress, and it becomes a vicious cycle, and it's a cascade of damage from primarily oxidative stress, which the iron is a factor driving that, the cell death, and the lipid peroxidation that's occurring. And these lipid peroxides start a chain reaction of even more oxidation and DNA damage, and that's why... these lipid peroxides are also known as radiomimetics. The damage that they induce in a living system is on a level of that with ionizing radiation. They're capable of damaging the DNA. They're capable of damaging proteins. And then depleting glutathione. And, you know, the rest is history. It's
a very deadly imitation, for sure.
Yeah, so once that cascade gets going, you really do need aggressive measures to curtail it. And one of the things that, I mean, you need something called a chain blocker to stop the lipid peroxidation, and that typically is something like vitamin E, a fat-soluble antioxidant. You've got to be putting back the precursors for glutathione, which is cysteine. And, you know, that would give you some measure of protection against the oxidative stress. And then now the DNA repair is another story, because what's getting depleted on the other end of things, the tryptophan metabolism depletes NAD. And NAD is your precursor for making ATP and also your DNA repair enzyme. So no NAD, you don't have ATP. That's more oxidative stress, more mitochondrial stress. And then you also don't have the ability to repair the DNA damage that's occurring. So it's potentially very lethal, just like gamma radiation. Although in some sense, I would say it's worse because the spike protein directly interferes with the P53 gene, which is the guardian of the genome. So that's another way
Doesn't it just shut it down, the P53?
It
takes it out offline. Yeah.
Well, part of it binds to the DNA sequence that produces the protein. So it's blocked from that end, and then the S2 portion of the spike protein will directly bind to the P53 protein in the cytoplasm. So it's there's multiple pathways to cancer here. You know, you've got a hypoxic cell that can't make ATP. There's low oxygen. It's being depleted of glutathione. It's being depleted of NAD. It's no wonder cancer is just exploding.
And it's turbo cancer in most cases, which is extremely rapid, a totally merciless form of cancer. Wherever you have it, it's just like it's hyper drive. Doesn't stop. They're finding people now, and they're diagnosing them with stage 4 cancer with no prior symptoms. Think about that. Stage 4.
Yeah, it's just all of a sudden metastatic. It's everywhere.
They don't call it turbo cancer. We used to call it super cancer, whatever. It's just hyperdrive. It does not stop. There's nothing that can be done with it. And I still think that that's what they gave David Dees to get rid of David, because there was nothing
sure
that could be done
like
to help
it.
Him. Yeah. You don't give someone 10 treatments of radiation in 15 days and have the tumors grow. It doesn't happen.
Right.
So I think he had turbo cancer without any question. And he agreed. We used to talk about it.
Yeah, every mechanism that would, you know, that the innate ability of the body to patrol for aberrant cells, it's gone. Uh-huh. The brakes are off.
Right. The body is such an amazingly complex, brilliant construct, whoever built it. And I know a lot of you feel that there's a divine aspect to that, and there may well be. But whoever did it did a remarkable thing. And yet this injection is so demonically satanic and diabolical in the way it is anti-life. It's designed to destroy life in probably several dozen primary pathways. There's just too many. It's frightening the way this thing works on people. And now the 20 or 30% who did not get shot up are in great danger because of shedding, which was part of the plan as well. They knew damn well that those who were shot up would shed. They knew how. They knew approximately how much. This has all been planned, all of it. So you must minimize your exposure to being around the vaxxed. and the vaxxed, I'll repeat, should minimize their exposure being around the unvaxxed, because the unvaxxed still have a fully functional immune system. Therefore, they can carry a number of different viruses and bacteria and be spreading them and shedding them, but not get sick, as their immune systems work to rid the body of them. But those who have no immune function or very little left, the vaxxed, they have AIDS, and they're going to pick these things up from the unvaxxed much more easily and much more intensely. So it's just smart business on both sides of the aisle to minimize your contact with the opposite vaxxed in your circles, whatever those circles may be.
I mean, I have no compunction about comparing the spike protein to a radioactive particle at this point, knowing the cascade of damage that it causes. I mean, the first thing it does is cause blood clotting, not unlike radiation. It destroys the endothelium. And if it gets into the bone marrow, it will destroy those stem cells, immune cells. And then it can damage the DNA and cause cancer.
It's a remarkable imitation or duplication of the same profile.
And it sticks to your clothing. I mean, we have many people now that go out and they work around the vax and they come home and their spouse or child is acutely sensitive to the spike for whatever reason. I mean, it is a protein. Mm-hmm. It is an allergen. It's designed to be an allergen, actually. So the person reacts, but if they make a point of changing their clothes and taking a shower, it's okay. So there are people that have to resort to that. If they're cohabitating with somebody that's sensitive, they have to make sure that they leave their clothes at the door, in some cases a sealed tote, take a shower, including the hair, and then they're okay. They're okay to interact with the rest of the family or whoever it is that's acutely sensitive to it. But it is a sticky protein because it's got sugars on it. It's glycosylated. That means it has sugars on the exterior, and it will stick to clothes, stick to hair.
It is so complicated, this whole thing. And one of the first things that we used to harp on was how incredibly sophisticated this biological weapon is. It has many, many tentacles that add up to no good. And you're seeing it right now. This year is going to be a very difficult year. Next year, probably worse. People are dying. And now it's not, well, Fred knows somebody who knows somebody who's died. Now it's becoming first person. You know somebody who has died. And that's a real indicator that this is picking up speed and momentum all the time. So, anyhow, minimize your contact. That's your best defense at this point. Minimize your contact.
Hard
to believe we're saying these kinds of things, but...
Yeah, we've been harping on it for, what, two years? I mean, nobody wants to believe it, but...
No, they don't. They do not. Okay, so there we go. Spike protein might as well be a radioactive particle because of many of the things it does. Not all, but many. There's certainly an overlay there. And if you get a chance, do look up the video of Dr. Daniel Nagase explaining about how the spike, if it swarms the heart, will interrupt and cancel out the biological signals to cause the heart to beat, which ultimately stem from the brain stem coming down. So it's a multifaceted issue. But that's why they can't restart the hearts of these people. The heart is shut down by the spike.
Yeah, I'm guessing many of the pathways... circuits in the heart are probably full of scar tissue, amyloids or fibrotic scar tissue.
Yeah,
that too. I mean, the scar tissue comes after the clotting.
Yeah,
this microclotting, the repeated cycles of ischemia, then reperfusion over and over and over again, will build up scar tissue, and that's really happening throughout the body. That ischemia reperfusion. Phenomenon.
from the head
so
to the toe.
So any organ is susceptible to damage as a result of that.
And not to harp on this, but remember the spike happily goes right into the brain by the hundreds of thousands and millions and maybe even the trillions. We don't know. It's a huge number. And once that spike sets up shop in the brain, it will cause constriction and shutdown at the capillary level, and the cells served by that particular capillary are going to die. And your brain does not regenerate brain cells. They're gone. So little piece here, a little piece there, and over time, and not much time necessarily, you've got big problems.
Yeah.
Okay. Cancer. We've been talking about that a little bit. Cancer and the spike protein. What's the connection here? Now, there's a new video out with a couple of three doctors, I guess. I think all three of them are doctors. Dr. Paul Merrick and Dr. Nathan Goodyear join Dr. Betsy Ashton, medical director at an integrative cancer treatment center called Brio Medical. All right, cancer and the spike protein. We're going to play two little short excerpts from this video. Here's the first one.
I'm going to go ahead and share my presentation here. So I think this word right here, Paul, really sums up what am I seeing.
Now, and the word is turbo cancer. That's what's on the screen.
I'm not the first one to mention this phrase, turbo cancer. And, we were talking beforehand, and you mentioned that phrase. And honestly, I had never heard it. But what I see basically fits in that phrase very well. It's cancer, but it's a very different form of cancer. The first physician that mentioned this was a Canadian physician. And what he was simply doing is he was blending that art and science of medicine. I can remember the first time I actually read your article about vitamin C and sepsis, but then when I watched the video of how you described how you decided to use that, it was a perfect blend of the art and the science of medicine. And what this doctor was doing when he described turbo cancer, of course, he was just literally destroyed by mainstream media by doing this, is he was just simply saying, what I see is cancer, but what I see is very different. He was just simply describing what he was seeing. So basically, because of that, now this has been a phrase that's been much maligned, but it's one that everybody's going to understand. So what am I seeing, Paul? I'm seeing a cancer that's behaving very differently. It's very aggressive. It's resistant to treatment. It spreads very, very rapidly. And all of this can be pointed back to, in many ways, spike proteins and what they're doing in the acute phase, whether that be injection or infection, but also with the coming long COVID crisis that we're seeing, that's going to basically tie in this as well, but more of a much longer game.
Okay, that's the opening portion we're going to play. So you heard Dr. Nathan Goodyear. This cancer is not like any other. It's different. And it is radical in its violence as it tracks through the body. It goes wherever it wants to go. And that's why they're having people show up with stage four at the opening.
Yeah, and having the ones come out of remission. People that had, had it knocked down and managed successfully are now confronting it again.
And this could be years. Somebody had cancer years ago,
mm-hmm.
and they think they're fine, and all of a sudden they have cancer all over the place. It's not something that this is completely unusual and not normal medical pathology. This weapon is so incredible in its satanic, diabolical methods of taking life apart. It's not funny. It's just horrible. And that's the hardest thing for people to grasp, that this is really not a vaccine because they've been so brainwashed. It has nothing to do with vaccinations. Nothing. Except they're vaccinating you to die. I guess that's one way to look at it. So I'm going to move ahead here to this next segment. Anything you want to add there?
No, go ahead.
All right. Hold on. Okay, we're going to pick it up a little bit early, but we'll catch up to where I'd like to be. This is good. All right.
Mission. When she first came to me, she was actually diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer back in 2010. And she came with an 8.8 centimeter left upper outer quadrant left breast mass. And she had the worst case of lymphedema you've ever seen in her left arm. She could not move her arm. She was on morphine. She was on Percocet because of the pain. She was actually able, through treatment integratively, to see complete eradication of that tumor. And she was unable to move her arm initially, but then she was able to lift up her arm. And I would always see her and say, Katie, she raised her arm because she was just so happy to be able to do that. Her tumor markers actually reached normal. But then in 2021, on a December trip, her and her husband both contracted COVID. Hit her pretty hard, actually hit her husband worse. But after that standpoint, her tumor markers within 3 to 4 weeks actually started to rise again.
Now, we're talking about unvaxxed people who are simply around the vaxxed. And this is really important. It's almost, and when they catch SARS-CoV-2, they catch the virus, they're catching a virus that is not something you just brush away. It's not just a cold. Yes, we remember that the original story was it was 99.9997% survival, had a survival rate, even with no treatment. And that may have been true with the Wuhan strain. Now we've got other issues at work here. And this
Well, and this, so this we're talking about 2021.
Right.
By then, the Delta variant was out, and I think the Omicron variant had just been announced in November of 2021. Now, the Omicron variant initially was speculated to be some sort of cancer, had a cancer feature to it. Remember the anagrams,
Oncomere? Yeah.
Oncomere is a microRNA having to do with the body surveillance of cancer, control for cancer. So, if this is a feature of the Omicron variant, and we still don't know if that arose spontaneously or if that was introduced into the population deliberately. I suspect the latter. But maybe that is the reason why we're seeing this explosion of cancer. Maybe with the original strain, it was a non-issue. But for whatever reason, we are seeing an explosion of cancer now associated with this particular spike protein.
Okay. So the virus, the current status of the virus, the current variant of the virus, seems to be carrying on a cancer-friendly protocol in the body. Put it mildly. All right, here we go.
It started to rise very quickly. And so we initiated treatment, but treatment didn't work whereas it worked before. So either this was...
Can I ask you, how sick was she with COVID?
Oh, she was sick for about 4 weeks.
So she was pretty sick.
Yeah, she was very sick.
Yeah, so I think you make, sorry me interrupting, but I think you make a really important point. So, it's spike protein, whether from the jab or from the infection, that can precipitate this. And if it's from infection, and I think you always want to treat early, but specifically, if you have an underlying malignancy, you really want to be treated really early. In fact, you should have a what-if kit at home because it's really the cumulative load of spike. So, it's not surprising. If this woman was sick for a while, it means she had a high spike load. And we know that the spike is going to, make the tumor uncontrolled. So, I think the message is we always want to treat early, but particularly if you have a malignancy, you should be prepared.
And, you know, when you look at viruses, there are currently 8 recognized oncoviruses, which are viruses that have been shown to actually cause cancer. And so when you look at how this virus behaves, it is hard to call it anything but an oncovirus, because it does it. And at the very end, I have a slide where I actually present a defined representation from conventional literature on what an oncovirus is. And it checks every box. It checks every box. So in this patient already with this extensive history of disease, you know, she has a compromised immune system. Of course, we were doing everything to help her immune system, but this infection, this additional spike load, not an injection, but from an infection, was enough to really spur on a very, very rapid growth and, unfortunately, a rapid decline for her. But this next patient...
Okay, we'll stop it right there. And you can look at this video as well under us in Guess. It's up there. It says, as a title, How the Spike Protein is Driving Cancer. So we're back to the issue of what is this virus now? It is around. People are getting it. And they're getting, apparently, cancer from it, which makes it an oncogenic viral subtype of the original SARS-CoV-2 virus, whatever that actually was, which we think was done to seed fear in the populace to drive people to take the needle and the bioweapon. But the current status of that virus seems to have changed dramatically now from some of the early things we're hearing like this. The spike protein is produced by the virus. You remember, you don't have to get shot up to get the spike protein. You'll get it from the virus. And that spike protein is a nasty, nasty creature. As Dr. Chetty said, it's the most diabolical and deadly thing that mankind has ever created, if mankind actually created it. I have my questions about that. It is really an ugly thing.
Well, and let's not forget, too, it has the ability to infect the bacteria that colonize the human body.
Right, right.
And, you know, cause alterations, in some cases, very, very detrimental alterations in the microbiome, where you're producing toxins instead of beneficial metabolites. So it isn't just a flu, as many want to believe.
Or a cold. No, this is a bad thing now. It has mutated. It's gone, what, through 3 mutations at least that we know about, right? Wuhan,
right, right.
Delta,
Omicron. The game changer, though.
Now the XBB. Go ahead.
I would contend that this thing, if it had been allowed to run its course, would probably have petered out like any flu would have on a given year. And like the original SARS-1 petered out. That was still in circulation. It just was not very prevalent. I mean, we had that study that was done in, I think it was 2012 in France, where they had 99 patients, or deceased patients, that had died of some kind of respiratory thing. And they were finding SARS-CoV-1 in many of those samples. So that was still circulating at background levels.
Yeah.
But what has changed is they've given people injections that are decimating their immune system, so that when they encounter this virus, it puts selective pressure on it to mutate to forms that can evade the immune system. And so now we're getting stronger variants, more pathogenic variants, and it is endemic now. We will never be rid of it. And I think that was the intention. They've now introduced a virus where it can cause cardiovascular disease, it can cause cancer, it can cause neurodegeneration, and they have profits written into this, you know, forever, for as long as anybody's left.
It is
a disease, you know, a revenue-generating disease game.
Big money for... Big Zionist Rockefeller medicine. It's the name of the game. So they're profiting all the way with their population reduction scam.
Right.
Pretty sickening when you think about it.
Yep.
Now, for all of you out there who are looking for pine needle tea, borax, and other cure-alls and detox, it's always good to detox the body. But don't go into this with any illusions. This is a biological weapon of obviously astonishing magnitude. And the virus itself now, we're seeing more evidence that you just heard, it is an oncogenic subtype or variant, which means it can trigger cancer. So it's on you, dear friends, to protect yourselves to the best of your ability. But there is no antidote, unless the Communist Chinese decide to release one. They claim they have one, but that they'll never give it to the Americans. So, you know, just try to minimize your contact with your vax opposites, okay? That's the best advice we can give you. And eat healthily, obviously. Don't overeat. Stay away from rich red meats. We don't need any more iron. Iron is a major player in this die-off.
Oh, and that brings up the topic of the vitamin D supplementation. Yeah. That is really, at this stage of the game, bad advice because of its effects on iron metabolism. Vitamin D is antagonistic to vitamin A. You need those two in a certain ratio to be healthy. Vitamin A is critical for your mucosal immunity, meaning your secretions, your sinus cavity. And with too much vitamin D, it just obliterates vitamin A's ability to do its job. And the other issue is vitamin A is essential for copper metabolism. And when you don't have normal copper metabolism, you cannot regulate your iron.
Iron is something that is getting very little mention except on this program, and it is crucial to understanding the processes, some of them, by which this biological weapon is killing so many
people. Yeah, it is critical. You know, if you read the literature, understand what the metabolic derangements are and the nutritional deficiencies that are resulting from these metabolic derangements, you have some chance of combating what's being done to you. I would steer people away from these heavy metal EDTA cleanses in somebody that's been so metabolically compromised by this spike protein. That's just going to make things worse. And people that are promoting that do not understand the pathology.
Just remember, you get spike from the needle and you get spike from the virus, okay? Don't forget that. All right. Okay, partner, thank you. Covered a lot of ground tonight. Very important. I hope you'll all listen to the program as many times as you feel is worthy. There's a lot of material there for you. Okay, take care.
Okay, Jeff, my pleasure. Good night, everyone.
All right, we will be back with Hour 3 and James Martinez coming up next.